Okay, we're going to welcome our next speaker. We're going to welcome. Or maybe should I wake you up?
Yeah, guys, I need up. To wake you up for sure, yeah. Hey, everybody. My name is Randy Beaudry. I'm standing in for Yip Tran. So she is back home taking care of the apples. I'm in Hawaii. How about that? The advantages of being a major professor. So we're going to talk about multiple applications of one MCP, in this case on Honeycrisp fruit. I think there's some obvious reasons, but I'll lead you through the arguments, I suppose. Honeycrisp has a background kind of unknown, I suppose, so we don't know all of the genetics back behind it, but basically it has a sweet flavor and a crisp texture, which has led it to become, in terms of the rate of growth, one of the number one apple in the United States. But the big issue is, how do we store these things for a longer period of time? That's the question. How can we do it successfully? So what we try to do is use a controlled atmosphere storage. That's been the common technique in years past for all of these many other apple varieties. The idea is that a high CO2 and a low oxygen inhibits ethylene action and allows you to store the apples for a longer period of time. So we have technologies, I should say, and then we have programming, I suppose you'd say, for controlling the atmosphere within chambers. This is our chambers at MSU, built by Storage Control Systems. The problem is, Jim, I don't know, maybe you're not trying hard enough, but we can really kill some fruit. We can turn them dark brown on the inside. So this is our typical Honeycrisp storage experiment. I kid our apple industry and tell them that we're doing a good job of destroying the fruit that they're trying to preserve. But the typical injury symptoms that we see are these brown lesions in the cortex of the fruit, as well as these open lens-shaped lesions within the fruit. So this is what we typically call CA injury or CO2 injury. And as Jim has just mentioned, low oxygen enhances the sensitivity of Honeycrisp to this particular disorder. And it's not uncommon to find 0% injury in fruit from one lot and then 100% injury in fruit from another lot. Typically 60 to 70% is as high as we go. But it can be problematic. So, excuse me. So there are techniques for reducing the CA injury. One is to use diphenylamine, anywhere from 250 to 100,000 parts per million. Oops, works well. We can precondition the apple fruits, and we've done some work in that area, and I'll show you a little bit of that data. Or one alternative is to avoid CA storage altogether and try to use one MCP to enhance this quality over the storage life of the product. So this is a little bit of work on preconditioning. It's a little tough for you folks to see, but I'll lead you through it here where I can. So this is fruit at 3 degrees, conditioned at 3 degrees for up to 7 days. 3 degrees, 10 degrees, 15 degrees, 20 degrees, and then 25 degrees Celsius. And what it shows you is that the higher the temperature during the conditioning period, the more rapid that conditioning takes place to reduce the injury, in this case, to see a controlled atmosphere. So conditioning period and the temperature, so the time as well as the temperature are both impacted. We looked at titratable acids. At least during the conditioning period, we didn't see an influence on titratable acids for that short time period. So one of the things that we tried to do to resolve the problem was use diphenylamine. There are a series of treatments here, but I just want to point out this one thing here, and that is when you incorporate diphenylamine, you get very little in terms of disorder incidence. So here we have 2009, 2010, 2011. Diphenylamine, very effective. We did one side experiment once, kind of an accidental experiment, and everybody here, I'm sure, has done accidental experiments in the past. We treated with diphenylamine. We put this fruit into buckets. And then we flooded the atmosphere inside the buckets with carbon dioxide. We got immediate browning of those tissues. So it takes a while for the DPA to have an effect. So the chambers that you saw earlier, relatively large chambers, it takes a couple of days for the atmospheres to become established. So in those chambers, because the diphenylamine takes a little bit of time to diffuse through the tissues, and it took about 3 days for protection to be there. So something to think about. If you take those fruit, you treat them with diphenylamine, and move them directly into CA storage, and there's 3% CO2 in the atmosphere, you're still liable to develop a disorder. Okay, matrix of factors. So we also looked at diphenylamine concentrations, and this was kind of a cool study. There's different levels of CO2 here, so 0, 5, 10, and 20% CO2. This is the 20% data here, 10% data here, 5% data here, and then a 0% data here. Diphenylamine levels here going from 1 to about 1,000 parts per million. And what you see is even at very high concentrations of CO2, you can get some protection using diphenylamine. It's really a potent material. But the other take-home point here is in this bottom line down here, there's zero percent carbon dioxide in that atmosphere, and it still requires about 100 parts per million of diphenylamine to protect those fruit. So even in a fruit that's sitting in a storage that has no external CO2, there's CO2 that builds up inside that fruit. And my hypothesis, anyway, is that that CO2 is responsible for some level of damage. And in this case, we had up to 20% for this particular lot of fruit. Okay, then the last method, so we use diphenylamine preconditioning. The last method would be to try to avoid CA storage altogether. I think the mode of action of 1-MCP is pretty well understood. We have the system for ethylene responsiveness. If the ethylene is there, we get some action. We get shutdown of the communication between ETR1 and CTR2. MCP binds, and then we have this continued signal that, yeah, everything's okay. Let's not ripen. So at the climacteric, we have loads of these binding sites. Ethylene levels are there. The solution, of course, is to use 1-MCP. To block those sites from ethylene responsiveness and keep them turned on. So one of the things that we had looked at in the times past was to use multiple applications of 1-MCP. Two studies here that I'll quickly cover before I get into the data for our study and run out of time. So one of them was to use a tomato variety here, and we used a continuous exposure of 1-MCP, and we held the fruit out at 24 days with a former student of mine, Mauricio Canoles. And the fruit did not ripen. So it didn't matter if the fruit were at turning stage or if they were half ripe. The fruit did not ripen during the time period where 1-MCP was exposed. So there was this wonderful shutdown of ripening. So that was true for both color development, which you're seeing in this graphic here, and then this is the firmness over here, which declined over time slightly, but mostly due to moisture loss, or so we believe. At any rate, so continuous exposure seems to have a continuous effect for some species. Then we did a similar sort of thing on apple fruits, and we gave them treatments once per week, once per 2 weeks, once per month, once per year, and so on. And we were able to store those apple fruits, in this case Red Delicious, for 200 days at room temperature, 20 degrees Celsius, with zero softening. This fruit never softened, but they definitely rotted, and they definitely lost titratable acids. But the point is that multiple applications were highly effective at preventing ripening. So what we decided to do was to see if we couldn't treat Honeycrisp fruit with multiple treatments of 1-MCP to try to preserve the quality and then once again avoid all the issues associated with storage. Those included snus and breakdown, CA injury, and so on, including enhancement of greasiness, changes in flavor, changes in firmness, and aroma. So somewhere in here she's going to eventually get to the treatment. So I took the apple fruit from four different areas across the state of Michigan. And we gave several 1-MCP treatments. So the idea was we would harvest the fruit, bring them into laboratory, set them out, and then within a day we would give them 1-MCP treatments. So in this case we had a chamber that we would introduce 1-MCP to, and then give them, and then the next day the fruit would begin to go into their storage regimens in here. So here's air storage in this case, 0.05% CO2 and then 3 degrees Celsius. So the treatments look like this. Their treatments were 1-MCP, no dose of 1-MCP actually, so it's a negative treatment or control. A single dose given at day zero, a double dose given at day zero and then 1.5 months, and a triple dose, day zero, 1.5 months, and then 3 months. So that was what we're trying to do. Thank you. And then we did the evaluations at 1.5, 3, 4.5, 6, and then 9 months. And these are the things that we looked at over here, internal ethylene, firmness, pH, and so on. And then the volatile compounds. Let's take a look at the data. So here's the ethylene levels here. What you can see in the top line is, here's day zero in this case, and then we have a no dose of ethylene, or MCP, pardon me, a single dose, a double dose, and a triple dose. And what you see pretty immediately is that a single dose gets you just about as far as you're going to get, I think. A second dose that you might get here, you get a slight reduction in ethylene, but it seems to catch up pretty quick. And by this point in time, 4.5 months, there's no difference in the internal ethylene concentration. So a single dose seems to get it there. Here we're looking at the firmness of the fruit. Honeycrisp fruit don't soften too darn much anyway, but a triple dose seemed to give you a slightly enhanced advantage. I don't know that I would consider that significant. Greasiness over here, there was a significant effect on greasiness. So this is the untreated check here. It became greasy quite readily. If anybody knows the difference between like a 4, which is a fruit you can barely hold on to, and a 3, which is a fruit that feels gooey, and a 2, which is a fruit that feels smooth but a little bit sticky, these are dramatically different. So at any rate, so we got some protection, but no difference between the multiple ethylene treatments in these cases. Number of different data points here. Titratable acids, slightly protected by the multiple doses, but not dramatically in this case. pH declined over time as well, but this is actually a linkage between titratable acidity and pH, which is a nice relationship that she was able to pull out. CA injury, not a major effect. We got a little bit out here at 9 months. I'm not sure why we saw it at 9 months, and then it seemed to go away again in a 12-month analysis, but so it goes. But what was interesting for us, I think, and kind of maybe something that's worth following up on is the effect of ripening, I guess, and then multiple treatments on the aroma profile. We saw more of an effect on the aroma profile than we did on ethylene and these other characteristics. Here's ethyl acetate here, which we use as kind of an indicator of fruit becoming overripe. So a very high level of ethyl acetate here for the no dose, single dose, double dose, and then a triple dose continuously reduced. Here's butyl acetate, once again, the same kind of trend. No real effect on 2-methylbutyl acetate, so the branch chain guys were slightly different than the straight chain compounds. And then back here we have hexyl acetate, so once again, the same kind of trend. No MCP, 1 MCP, 2, and then 3 doses. There was a relationship between greasiness and ethyl acetate, which once again allows us to sort of make that connection between this fermentation that takes place in an overripe fruit. And it's not associated with low oxygen. It's just associated with, I think, metabolism kind of gone awry. The connections that are normally there in a properly functioning mitochondria are kind of broken up. And we get a lot of ethanol production. As a result, we get ethyl ester production as well. So to sum up, MCP reduced the internal ethylene compound production and delayed greasiness in apple skin relative to untreated fruit. Additional doses gave you a slight enhancement over the effects of a single dose, but in terms of the volatile esters, while there were differences, I don't know that I would consider them important in terms of flavor characteristics, other than perhaps the difference between the untreated and then the treated fruit. A harvest maturity of apple fruits influenced the success of the 1-MCP treatment. We had to actually exclude one orchard because they'd used retain, and the fruit were very low maturity, and so they were maintained at a very good condition throughout the storage. We recommend, in our case, a single treatment of MCP and then moderate storage, 3 to 4 months, to avoid that over-ripening and then the senescence. So if you're going to store them in air, single treatment of MCP and leave it at that. Unless the MCP is free, feel free to apply extra doses. Thank you.
Any questions?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I've got a sinus infection. I can hardly hear anything. I'm sorry. If you look at those volatiles, hexyl acetate definitely has an impact on flavor. Ethyl acetate will, too. It has kind of a nail polishy sort of a characteristic. The 2-methylbutyl acetate, also another major flavor influence. But at the levels that we're looking at here, if it's present, you probably are sensing it. You're pretty darn sensitive to those. It would be pretty interesting to do a sensory trial to see if people could pick up the difference, but I'm guessing that they're all going to smell like apples. And in the later stages, overripe apples, you know, by the time they become a little greasy. Yeah. It's worthwhile. Yeah. MCP is pretty good at reducing greasiness. You know, I think one of the problems that we have in Michigan is we tend to harvest a little late, and it's a little tough to shut down ripening. But what was your question was, how do we it's a fatty acid metabolism kind of thing. So these are very long chain, waxy, and in some cases esters and alcohols and that sort of thing. Jim would know more about it than I would. But all of that metabolism is kicked up into high gear during ripening. So then you get the formation of not only fatty acids, free fatty acids and so on that are responsible for the aroma compounds, but also these longer chain fatty acids and waxes. It's all part of the same metabolic shift, as I understand it. I don't know, Jim, do you want to make a comment? Roughly the same. Yeah. Okay, thanks. All right, thank you very much.